Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa, the center of Iowa, the center of it all. Thanks for joining us today. Well, it's summer. There's cherries, there's strawberries. And Donna, you found croissants at the farmer's market. Are we good or what?
I did. Right here in the middle of Iowa, we have French pastries. So life is good.
What could not be good about that? I was absolutely thrilled.
And even with this heat wave that the news headlines have been trumpeting all over the country, heat dome, heat stress, da-da-da, you know, it's not too bad here. There's a really stiff breeze. And if you don't have your air conditioning on and you have your windows open, the curtains are fluttering around. It's really kind of nice.
Spoken like a true Iowan, it's good. Not the heat, it's the humidity, and we will survive. Well, knowing what to eat, what food to buy, it's a tricky business these days. There's food recalls, and there's COVID and bird flu, and there's always studies coming out about things that are probably not so good for us, and big business keeps getting bigger, and our supermarkets keep getting full of all sorts of interesting things.
There's no shortage of food around here.
But we want to make sure we're eating good stuff. So joining us at our kitchen table here today is Kamir Anshayan. And, well, he's been on our show before, and we're glad you're here. Welcome to our show, Kamir.
Great to be with you.
Good. Kamir is the director of the Center for Energy and Environmental Education at the University of Northern Iowa, and he's been doing that since, it says 1993. Lots of good things happening up there. And he is interested in turning science into action for energy conservation, renewable energy, and sustainable agriculture. He also is a community food systems mentor. Lots to talk about.
Yeah, I have to say, Kamir, you were one of the first people to ever mention in the Midwest the Buy Local campaign. That was a while ago, more than 20 years or something. You've been championing these local food system things.
Totally.
Yeah, so you are still doing that. And, what do you do at UNI besides all the things I talked about here? What's important and how does that affect our food system?
Well, I'm lucky to be working at a center that has 13 staff, so we have a really wonderful team. We manage one of the largest AmeriCorps programs in Iowa, which is very community service oriented, and we do food system, we do land restoration, we do energy conservation. We have lots of partners where AmeriCorps members are placed at those partners. So we are involved in a lot of community service, direct community service work. It's very solution-oriented, working with things that community members want to, community leaders want to do in their where they live, in their towns. So that's really the heart of what we do as a center at UNI. Our center has a big program in local food, strengthening the local food economy of our region of Iowa. But as you know, we all have been involved in all of Iowa because we're well connected with lots of other people around the state who are trying to strengthen the local food economy of Iowa, which means more farmers, more fruit and vegetable production, more direct marketing, making all of these available around us more for more Iowans, and supporting the livelihood of farms in our area. So that's all kind of part of what we do.
Good. We hear time and time again that Iowa has the best soil and we can grow all sorts of things and we're supposed to feed the world, but that's a contentious sort of thing. But feeding just ourselves is a pretty big offer there. I mean, so we've heard lately, and Donna keeps me up on this thing, we, you know, try to follow food issues, that there's been cancer studies in Iowa, and there seems to be...
Yes, the headline is, Iowa is the number two in the highest rates of cancer in the nation, right? And the one with the fastest rising rates. Now, we're bringing this up with Comyar because a few years ago, Comyar brought in Dr. Charles Benbrook, who is the founder of the Heartland Study, and introduced him at the University of Iowa Medical School. Now, the Heartland Study is a study that enrolls pregnant mothers and follows them and their children for a number of years, testing for farm chemicals in the urine of the mothers and the babies. Is that right, Comyar?
They're doing really, I'm not as familiar with all, yes, it's kind of...
Something like
has
that.
...has to do with child health, mom's health, and study of them over time. And they have lots of data points, and they're learning more and more, getting closer and closer to making definitive, saying something definitive.
Right, because Dr. Benbrook has a long, like 35 or 40 year history of working with research concerning agricultural chemicals and the effects on public health.
Yeah. So let me also mention some of the work we do. Our staff, Audrey Trunlam, who manages our environmental health program, she is really more familiar,
right,
very involved in that group. And really she's started a wonderful program called Farming for Public Health, which really elevates farming practices that Iowa farmers are doing that manages the land without the use of pesticides and basically farming practices that promote health in a broadest sense. And so, you know, that's something that kind of addresses one of the issue you brought up kind of at the beginning in terms of the statistics on cancer in Iowa. And I've heard... You know, I've read and I've heard the presentation by the Iowa Cancer Registry people about what specific cancers are on the rise. So, yes, there's some cancers in Iowa that are on the rise while neighboring states and national numbers are either flat or declining.
And which ones were those? Do you remember?
I don't remember the exact one.
But, yeah, it's specific stuff we got to deal with
there. There is some specific... And so I would just, without, like, obviously I'm not an epidemiologist, but I can tell you some things that I learned from that presentation is that obviously cancer and all of its forms are it's a very complex thing. It's mm-hmm. over time, different systems, there's many, many, many factors, and everybody's different, there's genetic, there's this, there's that right, so it's very complex, but we do know that there are materials that are used in Iowa agriculture that are used in high volume, and we know there is evidence of harm. There is published studies all over the place. There's like tons of studies. That yes, we cannot. So a lot of kind of health professionals shy away from saying anything they may not be true because they want 100% proof. But 100% proof may be an elusive thing. It's not something that you can have very nice studies that perfectly prove that this particular weed killer is linked to this particular cancer. it may be impossible to make such a statement. But we can say that 50 million pounds of weed killers are applied in Iowa, and we know some of them harm the living systems of people, living system of the land, that they harm us. We don't know how specifically for some things we do, for some things we don't. They might do reproductive harm. They might do a lot of things. So given the gravity of and the scale, it seems prudent for health professionals to simply be honest and say, yes, we may not know for sure, but this is not a good thing.
Right. The trending thing. Yeah, the trending lines don't look good.
It's not a good thing to put 50 million pounds of highly
possible carcinogens, yeah.
Some of them possible carcinogens in the environment where it ends up in our air that blows in with the wind when a neighbor is spraying, or ends up in the groundwater. The same with high levels of nitrate and the way they interact. So there's all kinds of ambiguities. But, again, we can say, look, this is not a good thing, particularly when we know better farming systems are available, are practical, and are productive. Iowa farmers have shown these things are possible. So I guess that's my take on this whole statistics that Iowa is number two in cancer cases. We can't just say, well, we really don't know. We can say, yes, we don't know, but there's a number of things we can do. There's a number of things we can do to move us away from this situation. We know we're...
Yeah, more than just a personal way of, like...
And this is not a partisan issue. Cancer is not a partisan issue, and health is not a partisan issue. It's just like... It's basic. It's a basic of life, and it's just because some agricultural practices around us have not been helpful to Iowa. It doesn't mean you're against farmers. It doesn't mean you're against. It just means we can do better. It means there are farmers who are doing wonderful things. Let's reward and incentivize those practices. So that's all. So that's kind of. I think it is wise and it's prudent for health professionals to acknowledge that it's not a statement against current system of agriculture. It just means current system of agriculture, it is what it is. We're all in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean it has to be this way all the time. If it's polluting waters, well, let's acknowledge, let's just look, we know other ways that we can avoid this. So that's kind of my take on it. It's a precautionary approach.
Absolutely.
And it's a prudent approach. And it's, you know, people who care about the unborn, well, the pesticides are affecting the unborn. And you should be, there's plenty of evidence. I would say if the strongest evidence that exists in the literature about pesticides and human health, it's their impact on neurodevelopment of children. And
absolutely.
It begins in mother's womb. That's where it all starts. And there is data on that. And that's what the Heartland study is trying to nail down. So...
Very clear. Thank you so much, Kamyar. So these health effects, those things, like even if you decide you're going to have eat personally all organic food because it has less pesticide residue on it, and you live in the middle of Iowa, it's still in the soil, in the water, in the air, and we need a collective, perhaps legislative way to begin to manage these things. So... It's a big, big conundrum right now, especially in Iowa. We really are, as I say, we are in the belly of the beast here. We're in the middle of the middle. We have the most cropland of almost any state. We're really right up there in terms of corn and soybeans and, you know, effluents from, you know, CAFOs and things like that. Now, we're going to talk about one other thing that is within our control. Kamir brought this up in a PFI posting because there was a big article in the New York Times. The headline was, "How bad are ultra-processed foods really?" So I thought, yeah, we should talk about this more on the radio show. I'm going to start by saying for about the last 30 years, I have been kind of presenting this whole concept by saying that I try not to eat things that my grandmother could not have eaten. I'm not saying I eat what my grandmother ate, but my grandmother, who was born before the turn of the last century, grew up in a time where we did not have ultra-processed foods. So, now, as we say, there are studies and studies and studies. Mm-hmm. So this article in the New York Times started out by talking about in the mid-1990s, a nutritional epidemiologist in Brazil noticed something alarming. Obesity rates among children in his country were rising rapidly. Does that sound familiar? That didn't happen just in Brazil. So he started to do research and looked at the data on food buying patterns of Brazilian households to see if they had changed in recent years. So he found that people were purchasing less salt, sugar, cooking oil, staples like rice and beans, and more processed foods like soda, sausages, instant noodles, packaged breads, and cookies. So he devised the system to talk about and coined the term ultra-processed foods. So he made it four categories of foods. So there's the unprocessed or minimally processed food like fresh or frozen fruits and yogurts, vegetables, lentils, coffee, tea, herbs, spices, yogurt, rice, that sort of thing, you know, the things that you cook with at home in your kitchen. And the things that my grandmother probably had access to. And then the second category was processed culinary ingredients like cooking oils, butter, sugar, honey. So, you know, canning is processing, freezing is processing, you know, that is processing. And then the third category was foods made by combining foods from category in one and two. So fermenting, baking, you know, freshly baked foods. They may contain preservatives to extend shelf life. Then he went for, this is what ultra-processed foods are. And these seem to be, the data is showing, these are problematic. So using methods and ingredients you would typically not find in grocery stores. You'll find the products, but you can't buy normally high fructose corn syrup, hydrogenated oils. Well, yeah, you actually can buy them, but concentrated proteins like soy isolates and things like that. So what the things that seem to be damaging are things like soda is my favorite one, saying that's the easiest one to eliminate. So the things that you see that you could probably not make in your kitchen at home are ultra processed. And these, it's turning out, are leading to obesity, diabetes, heart disease, et cetera, et cetera. So Kamyar posted this, a listing, a thing on PFI saying, you know, we can do something about this. This is something you can change in your own kitchen, in your own eating habits.
Let me add to that.
Okay.
I don't think we can change, but it's not just a personal thing. That's what I want to say. Because,
The
food environment that we're situated in, for many people, they are surrounded by the ultra-processed foods. It's not just a choice that you have often.
It's not a convenient choice.
Not a convenient choice. So it's a complicated, obviously, it's a complicated issue. I want to step back
mm-hmm.
and think of how do we build a thriving food economy that's healthy. okay, in our county, in our region. So, you know, I feel like it's so lucky, like we're so lucky to go out on Saturday to a farmer's market and there is, you know, there is onions, apples, okra, mushrooms, raspberries, peppers, collard greens, kale, cilantro, melons, beets, Swiss chard, carrots, I mean, just on and on, right?
Well, so, I always say there's no such thing as eating too many fruits and vegetables.
That's right. That's right. Eat unlimited amounts
that's
of those. But I keep thinking, okay, we're so lucky, right? We're so lucky to be able to go to a place, to a farmer's market, or to see some of these things in your grocery store. But let me tell you this. Just a couple of years ago, we did a survey of 149 retail food stores in Blackhawk County, in my home county, to find out about availability of vegetables, fruits and vegetables, and healthier options, okay? Kind of based on what you said, would be the other categories that aren't ultra-processed.
Right, what your grandmother could have eaten, right?
That's right. And this was done by a PhD student who is actually finishing her PhD at ISU in the nutrition department there. So here's what she found. Of the 149 stores, 65 were gas stations, 18 were dollar stores, 13 were ethnic grocery stores, 12 were convenience stores, only 8 were supermarkets. And so we're talking about a county. Our county has 8
whole
supermarkets.
Whole county, yeah.
Whole county. 6 liquor stores, 6 drug stores, and 4 others. So here's what we learned. We learned that in terms of fruits and vegetables scores, they were scored. So that she had a whole rubric of how to score them. 12% of the stores were excellent. 13% were good. 19% were adequate, 45% were poor, 11% had none.
No fruits and vegetables, nothing,
no food. Okay, so think about that. I mean, think about 65 gas stations, 18 dollar stores, even 13 ethnic grocery stores, 12 convenience stores. What do you see in those places? Almost 100% ultra-processed food, right? So that is the food environment for residents of our county.
And this is in Iowa.
What I mean?
This is in Iowa.
This is in Iowa.
Where we're feeding the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is we're surrounded by good soil, great weather, wonderful farms, capable, skillful farmers, but we're not... Like, we're not feeding ourselves good food. There's something wrong here.
We'll get back to this because talking about how we feed ourselves here in Iowa. We'll be back real soon. This is KHOI, and you're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. With Kamyar and Cheyenne about Iowa food systems and how we feed ourselves. There's a lot of different things we put in our mouths, and not everything is all that good. And there's a term that, well, it seems there's a lot of acronyms now and letters used for things. UPFs, ultra-processed foods.
Yeah, it's also called junk food.
Well, UPF makes it sound official. Last week on the Donna Lana Kitchen Show, we talked about the history of cooking. And actually, the idea of processed food was not a bad thing. I mean, cooking food is processing food. People have been processing food for a long time. It helps us digest things, helps get the vitamins out of it. But lately, this ultra-processed food is a whole different thing.
Well, here's another quote from the New York Times article. It says, if you look at the ingredient list, which has to be listed on any packaged food, not on broccoli, but if it's frozen in a package, then it has to say what's in it, and you see things you wouldn't use in home cooking, then it's probably an ultra-processed food.
So, yeah. So, by the way, on that department, just so that you know, if you walk into the health market part of Hy-Vee, and if you go to some of these kind of health food stores and organic, you know, that have a lot of organic produce and everything, there are also a ton of ultra-processed food.
Absolutely.
Including this Impossible Burger, all this stuff, right? It's like absolutely ultra-processed. So we know, those things are, you know, just to be fair, it's
soy
not like
milk, just, yeah.
Yeah, it's not just in the gas station, you know, what you see, cookies and Oreos and stuff in the gas station, but it can be in a very high-priced item that is like Impossible Burger, which is super highly. I don't know if one can add a super highly processed, you know,
ultra processed food, right?
But so I want to come back to kind of what's in our sphere of influence, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. to me that's an important thing. So I keep thinking there is a need to improve our food environment, you know, so that the residents of our region have healthy and affordable choices, right? So in order to do that, we need many more growers around us.
Of vegetables and fruits, yeah.
Yes. And we need, more growers who are growing edible food. You know, fruits, vegetable, local meat, local dairy, all of that, right? And, but here's the more important one. We also need local residents who value them and support them. We can't say, local food is great, but if you're not engaged, if you're not actively really trying to support local farms around you, then you're not trying to build a good local food economy that is healthy and not ultra-processed.
And that's not easy to do, because even the major supermarkets, like I do know that, you know, so we have both Hy-Vee and the Fairway markets, which are pretty dominant in Iowa. They're big players. They will have some signs once in a while, oh, these tomatoes were grown, you know, 30 miles away. That's good. But predominantly, that's not what you're getting even
that's
in those
right.
distribution systems.
That's right. That's right. And they so that's what I'm saying. We need schools, restaurants, institutions, and grocery store to increase the demand. They need to be a big player. It's not enough for just me and you to go to farmers market. It needs to be, again, we're talking about the food environment. Most people, school is the food environment of the kids. Mm-hmm. The institution, hospital, a retirement home, again, grocery store, unless they actively play a role, unless we, you know, this is always going to remain on the margin, and people, obviously, there's a cultural loss, right? I mean, in terms of not cooking. That's another, obviously, you, Donna and Lana, you know, you guys know most about this. Which
right,
is
that's what we're trying to promote. Cook your food
exactly,
at home, right?
Exactly, food at home, which, of course, a lot of people have difficulty because of income, they don't have time, and all those issues, obviously. But still, it doesn't mean we should have all these ultra-processed food all around, right? We need many, many, many sectors of our economy to take food seriously, and whether they're school administrators, whether they're hospital administrators. There are grocery owners, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, come here. I want to say right now, I think that the problem, some of them revolve around that people who are taking food seriously right now are the ones that are the big mega corporations that are making a lot of money by making processed foods, you know? They use cheap ingredients, they sell it for a higher cost, and those are the people taking our food system seriously, and it's not to our benefit.
Yeah. I mean, by seriously, I mean the way you would. That's what I meant. So here's the thing. The good news is for the last 2 years, a group of Iowans, farmers, food system advocates, and lots of others, school food service people, nonprofits, have been working together to come up with a plan for Iowa, a food system plan for Iowa. They formed the Iowa Food System Coalition, and now they have a plan that identifies high priority goals that we need to invest in and build if we want to have a strong food economy in Iowa that focuses on health and not these ultra highly processed food, right? We need to take control of that. And in order to do that, like I said, we need more growers and more people who value them.
And all of the in-between. So if somebody wants to grow 13 acres of carrots, that's a lot of carrots. They have to be able to process them. They need the distribution.
All of that. They need the infrastructure
because, you know, you got to clean the carrots. You got to refrigerate the carrots. You got to put them into boxes. And we don't have that in our local food system.
So that's exactly what the group identified.
Right.
And they identified access to land. They identified everything you mentioned, processing, distribution, food hubs, and education of Iowans about valuing good food.
We're working on that. We're working on that here, right here on the Don Juan Kitchen.
That's right. So, no, that's right on. So I would encourage everyone, because it's not something that one organization can do.
No.
It takes all of us. Mm-hmm. And the Iowa Food System Coalition has a website, has all their goals listed. They have a new executive director, and lots of people are working together around those high-priority goals to get things done. It's really incredible.
Well,
I would say that's the best news.
A hopeful thing is, I know Kamyar and I and Lana, we've been working on these issues for
a long time,
30 or 40 years. And I must say, more money is coming out of the USDA to fulfill some of these things than I have ever seen in my lifetime.
I agree.
And that's they are wonderful. Funding things like the Iowa Food Coalition and probably some of your work, Kamyar.
Yes. And all over the state, people are applying and improving access to good food for vulnerable populations. That's another area of work that we're very involved in here in Black Hawk County, and many others are across the nation as well as in Iowa.
Well, and it's an issue because ultra-processed foods are... Not only are they junk foods, they are also cheap foods.
Well, I want to get the idea of it all comes down to money. I mean, it really does. We can say that we're doing it for health, we're doing it for whatever, but everybody goes into a grocery store to buy something, and people worry about the cost of things. And I've always been amazed that the companies that make ultra processed foods, the so called junk foods, can have the wherewithal to strip the foods of what they naturally have and put something back in. It doesn't make sense.
Something cheaper.
But like you said, Donna, that's what we're getting. Why are the things they putting back in making us fat?
Increasing shelf life. A lot of them have to do with increasing shelf life so that they just stay there for a long time. And that's not good, right?
it's preservatives. And because they have a long shelf life, it means it's cheaper for the companies to make it. They don't have to control the inventory as closely. It usually doesn't have to be maybe not refrigerated. All of these things that make the foods cheaper and, quote, shelf stable.
Wait, it's terribly ironic that what makes these foods have a long shelf life. It seems like we should have a longer shelf life, too, by eating this stuff. But evidently, it doesn't work that way. No.
So here is something that I think we need more conversations about, which is kind of circling back to what you started with, which was kind of cancer number two in Iowa, right? So if you look at, I'm a twice cancer survivor of two different forms of cancer. So I'm familiar with a world. And so I've been to Mayo Clinic and I've been reading up on cancer. So I've been if you go to the Mayo Clinic and just put in your search box, put in diet and cancer, okay? Mm-hmm. And diet, you know, or cancer prevention and diet or something like that, right? You'll be surprised how these are written by the physicians, by dietitians who work at Mayo Clinic based on, very good evidence, right? Very good evidence. And they say, okay, if you're a just for prevention in general, there are two things. One is obviously if you've had cancer and you're kind of recovering from chemotherapy or radiation, what kind of diet would help you? But a bunch of it is really about what you ought to eat, that what studies have been done based on what diets and that have led to stronger immune system and therefore less cancer.
Prevention.
Invariably, a lot more fruits and vegetables, a lot less meat of all kinds.
Especially processed bacon, sausages.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And, a lot more, if you eat whole food, then you have fiber. And so it's very clear. They say, okay, eat unprocessed, all these ultra, just avoid
whole grains,
these ultra processed.
Whole grains, legumes,
exactly.
Yeah.
Right? All the things that you know, right? You already know that these are common thing. Mm-hmm. And we're not, but again, think of those stores in Iowa, in Black Hawk County, that more than, 55% of them do not have fruits and vegetables or anything, right? You mm-hmm. see what I mean? That's the food environment, and we need to change that. That's what it's not easy, but health professional, everybody, if we're talking cancer, okay, if you talk cancer, well then, eat a lot less highly processed meats and eat a lot more fruits and vegetables, if it's around you, right? You know,
go and seek it out. Eh?
Yeah, the trouble is there's a lot of you don't have a lot of advertising campaigns for fruits and vegetables.
Yes, the Broccoli Council is not promoting.
I got it.
You know, when you walk into any grocery store, I walk into Hy-Vee or Fairway, the first thing is a wall of cookies and various things. And actually, one of the things we studied in our survey was the wrong kind of advertising. They're pushing certain products, right, through their discounts or advertising.
Absolutely.
And they're always doing those things that are really bad for you.
They have a good profit margin.
Well, yeah, you're wondering why these companies have enough money to spend on advertising.
Yeah, for goodness sake. Well, here's not a real cheery fact and figure. Here's something from an article by Ralph Nader writing about ultra-processed food, and this is from an article that came out this past May. He says ultra-processed food corporations are actually doing a really good job of advertising to our kids. Ultra-processed foods make up two-thirds of the calories consumed by children and teenagers in the United States. I suppose that could work, considering if you had, big slurpy drinks and
cereal.
Pizza.
Children's and, cereal is a big
children's cereal.
Culprit.
My goodness,
yeah, because
sakes,
it's,
yes,
you know, I mean, there are good cereals out there. You know, you got to find ones that have whole grains and, you know, not high sugars or no sugars and things like that. But that's not what most of those cereals are, like the Fruit Loops and Pop-Tarts and, you know, all the things that kids
love. And they're fun.
Love.
They hit our taste buds just in the right place. So that's how it does. Well, we'll take another short break here and come back and talk more, especially about some good stuff that's happening. Thanks to people like Kamyar. This is KHOI. You can find out more about this station and more about the Donalana Kitchen at khoifm.org. Back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We're talking about healthy food systems in Iowa with Kamyar. Kamyar and Shan, can you tell us about, there's more good stuff. It isn't all bad things that are happening. And
yes,
you have an outreach program that involves gardens. I think that's a good idea. Can you talk about how gardens can help? I like gardens.
Yeah,
I think
it's
that's
just
a
like,
good idea.
Okay. It's kind of at the household level. Well, well, first of all, let me just say, gardening is really about mental health.
Yeah.
It's
yes,
really about being outside and touching the soil and caring for other plants and kneeling
moving
in the ground.
Your
it's
body,
really, it's,
yeah,
it's a form of prayer, really, huh? For me. Anyway, it's just like sacred ground, kneel, touch it, you know, hands and knees. It deserves that kind of respect. So I love it. I love it. So I've got, ever since I worked on a farm in Maine 30-some years ago, maybe, I've been gardening every year. And I love it. And obviously it's so convenient. You can, anything you want, you know, in your backyard, and you just go get great salad every night. We've been eating great salad
it's
every night.
It's cost-effective, you know, too, right?
Yeah, it's cost-effective. So we thought, all right, what if we try to renew a culture of gardening in our community,
mm-hmm,
and in the Waterloo Cedar Falls area? So by removing all the barriers to starting a garden, you know, and so people have said, I always wanted a garden, you know, start a garden. You know, a lot of people who recently retired, you know, saying, I always wanted to garden, but I just didn't know, like, where to, you know, who do I call to get somebody tilling my garden and everything. So we thought, okay, let's offer this garden starter services to first-time gardener. We come to your you sign up, we come to your backyard, we assess where is the best location to put your garden, what size garden, what do you want to grow, everything. Then we have a tiller. We'll come and prepare that site for you. And we actually have ordered plant starts. We have some basic plant starts, tomatoes, onions, peppers, obviously spinach, beets, a few kind of a basic plant, lettuce. The plant starts, okay, and of course we start the season in late April. Mid-April. So for mid-April, when we show up at somebody's backyard, we have seeds for them. We have baby lettuce, baby spinach, onions, and kale, and collard greens. We have those. We till the ground, we help the gardener, aspiring gardener, to plant them. We show them the spacing, and then we seed some stuff. So an hour later, they have a garden. And over the last 3 years, well, we are in our fourth year. We just finished our fourth year. We have done roughly 210 backyard gardens.
Oh.
We started 210 backyard gardens. And we have surveyed them to see, well, you know, because, you know, it's
right.
You know, not everybody is going to continue. And I would say some 80 to 90% are like saying, we loved it, we're continuing, and we're occasionally go by their house and saying, wow, there's a garden, you know, still there. So it has been just wonderful. So this is we call this project a garden in every lot. And we're like taking our time. Every year we do about 60 or so gardens as we have time. Some year, like this year, it rained a lot. You can't go till if it's rained. And so it kind of delayed us, but we're still getting requests, you know. So we have a tiller. So we started this project with very basic. So we have a tiller, we have a trailer and a truck. And then we have our AmeriCorps members managing it. So this is like a perfect role for young people who want to get something going, and it has been great. I really think in any community, a high school teacher and a group of students could get this going.
Oh, yes.
And a lot of the people that we've done it, you know, obviously everybody of all economic status would enjoy a garden. So we didn't say we're only doing it for low-income people or anything. We just said anybody who wants it, we will come and do it. It's all building a culture of good food, right, for everybody. But we have prioritized, veterans, elderly, people, underserved neighborhoods, you know, we've recent refugees who love the garden. They just didn't know who to call to get their garden going. So we love it. It's a great project, and it's kind of surprisingly, it has been a great community building, making connections, because, you know, we just go, a group of us go to people's backyard, and we meet, we talk, and we kind of, in this time of kind of manufactured divisions, we're talking about what we share, which is the love of good food and them wanting to have fresh vegetables. I think this is so wonderful for college students to experience. You know, we go mm-hmm. and actually talk to people that they haven't met, you know, people who speak a different language, or they're of a different color, skin,
or a different generation.
different generation. It's just amazing. Just amazing. And I think, so we're sticking to it. This is a long-haul project.
Have you seen other communities try to replicate this?
Well, we learned this from, I was at a conference and learned that the Greater Lansing Food Bank, that's what they were doing in Lansing, Michigan.
Oh.
And I thought, wow, that's great. What a service Food Bank is offering to their clients. And it's kind of like helping people to grow some of their own food without it coming through the food bank, you know. So I don't know how many other communities. All I know is that I learned it. I got the idea from them.
This
so
is exciting.
We've been just going. Yeah.
The idea of, to use a metaphor here, all these gardens cross-pollinating, because when I think I think of gardens in somebody's backyard, there's always somebody across the lot line there that's looking over the fence, and what the heck are they doing over there? So gardens are not just really for the people that you're providing them for. By the end of the season, I just bet you some of these people lean across their garden, lean across their fence line, or go over to their neighbor's door and say, so do you want a zucchini or something? I mean, people can share the bounty and actually share the knowledge of what's going on. Certainly watching a garden grow, even if it's not yours, you can learn a bunch of good things.
Yeah, and you don't grow ultra-processed food in your garden. You know, those flukies don't just pop up on stalks. So you're avoiding those temptations when you're growing your own food.
That's right. That's right.
That's good. I hear that we are looking forward to Practical Farmers of Iowa field days, and I believe you have a field day talking about community gardens. That's coming up soon. Do you happen to know when that's going to be?
Yeah, that's going to be July 20th. Saturday, July 20th, I think from 10 to noon.
Mm-hmm.
So I manage the garden at People's Clinic, which is a clinic that serves kind of low income population, people who might not have insurance, and it's an amazing clinic. And so we grow about a third of an acre or so vegetables, and all of it goes to the patients at no charge.
Food is medicine. There you go.
Food is medicine. Exactly. And so at that field day, we show what we're doing, but also we've partnered with Xerces Society and have several new beds of pollinator for beneficial insects.
Yeah,
for beneficial insects. So we want to kind of show how we've converted what we did to prepare the beds and plant these native vegetation for beneficial insects for the garden.
Very good. Well, we started out talking about, well, we've got problems in our food system, but there are things we can do. And you suggested identifying our own sphere of influence and doing what we can. Do you want to kind of wrap up your thoughts here about Iowa food systems and give us some good words to go out on?
Well, I mean, I keep thinking, you know, we need to have a thriving food economy. We need to plan. We need to invest in processes and infrastructures that build our capacity to support more farms growing table foods to feed ourselves.
If you want inspiration, you can go on the Practical Farmers of Iowa's website and find ComYard's Field Day. What's the date again? For that?
July 20th.
Right, so it's open to the public, and you can go. It's in Waterloo?
Yep.
It's in Waterloo?
Waterloo.
And you can meet ComYard in the middle of his work.
It's so great talking with you guys.
Good. ComYard is a community food systems mentor, and he certainly has always good advice and good information,
and
too.
A great way of explaining things. Very, very diplomatic and thoughtful, as always.
Good. Thank you for being with us today. That's great.
Thank you for the work you do. Food is the most important frontier.
It's also the most fun. So there, you know.
That's right.
It's good to have fun. Yes, it
and
is.
And delicious. There you go.
Oh, good. Well, speaking of food, this I mentioned earlier, this is kind of the summer vegetables and summer fruits are starting to kick in. I have a mulberry tree out in front of my house, and this time of year I can watch the squirrels make absolute fools of themselves out there trying to get all of them. That's good. I also want to mention we do upcoming things this time of the show, and coming up this Friday, the day after summer solstice, there will be a full moon, the strawberry moon. And it's called the strawberry moon not because it's red.
And
but
it's strawberry season.
It is strawberry season. It's strawberry season. Other names for this moon are the honeymoon or the rose moon. Solstice is coming up. Happy Juneteenth, everybody.
So this radio show is also made into a podcast, and this was created as actually part of a USDA grant about local foods. So if you want to hear it in podcast, which means you're not glued to your radio, just go wherever you listen to podcasts, put in Donna Lana, that's one word, DonnaLonna Kitchen, and there you will have us in your ears through the podcast.
Thank you, Donna. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We show up every week on this fine radio station. Music by the Barn Owl Band. Slow down, enjoy summer. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
Excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food.
Eat
and
good
enjoy
food.
And enjoy
Eat
life.
Eat good food and enjoy life.
You betcha. Okay.